All right, we are in
1 Samuel 28, but not for long. 1 Samuel. First Samuel 28. So the so-called witch of Endor calls up Samuel, and she's a consulter with familiar spirits, and her shock at seeing Samuel shows that it was not a common occurrence. And so this was literally Samuel coming up out of Abraham's bosom. We talked about all that last time. And Saul is basically apoplectic about stuff. But it says down in verse 24, and the woman had a fat calf in the house, and she hasted and killed it and took flour and kneaded it and did bake unleavened bread thereof. And she brought it before Saul and before his servants, and they did eat. Then they rose up and went away that night. Chapter 29, verse 1. Now, the Philistines gathered together all their armies to Aphek, and the Israelites pitched by a fountain which is in Jezreel. Now, just to remind you, I didn't draw a map or anything, but if you remember what the map of Israel kind of looks like on the coast, you have that little kind of a nipple type thing. That's actually Mount Carmel. And going on a diagonal from Mount Carmel down towards the Jordan River, slightly southeast, you have what is the Valley of Armageddon. The River Kishon runs through there. And actually, the Valley of Jezreel runs through there. So all this is taking place now in the literal place where the second advent of Christ occurs. So the Valley of Armageddon. That's Jezreel. Verse 2. And the lords of the Philistines passed on by hundreds and by thousands, but David and his men passed on in the rereward with Achish. Now, rereward might be pronounced rearward or the rear guard. That's what it is. You can see that from the Bible. It's acknowledged as an older ancient word that comes from French and something else, and it means rear guard or rear word. Look, if you will, in Numbers chapter 10, and just to show you that the Bible will lead you right if you study the words. Numbers chapter 10, and go on down to verse 25, Numbers 10, 25. And the standard of the camp of the children of Dan set forward, which was the re-reward of all the camps throughout their coast. It's talking about Dan. When the ark moved out, he was always the guy in the back. That tribe was always in back, the rear guard. And so over and over again, you find this re-reward is the rear guard or the rear word. And, policemen and, soldiers talk about, somebody having their six. That's kind of the rear guard type thing. Well, it's kind of interesting because guess how many times re-reward shows up in the Bible? Six times. So just remember that. He's got your six. verse 3. Then said the princes of the Philistines, what do these Hebrews hear? So, you have to give the Philistines some credit. A lot of times the world knows that you're in the wrong spot when you're with them. So here is David. He's, I don't know if he's putting on a show to pretend to serve Achish as a true servant, and then he's going to turn on him in battle, which is what the Philistines will be worried about, or whether he is going to actually fight against Israel because he's bitter against them, and I don't know. My thoughts are that he's probably going to turn on the Philistines in the middle of battle. But I'm not sure what his plans are. Then said the princes of the Philistines, what do these Hebrews hear? I mean, Achish trusted him, but the rest of the Philistines don't. Verse 3. And Achish said unto the princes of the Philistines, Is not this David, the servant of Saul, the king of Israel, which hath been with me these days and these years, and I have found no fault in him, since he fell unto me unto this day? Now, back in 27:7, you'll learn that David has been with Achish for a year and 4 months. Verse 7, 27:7. And the time that David dwelt in the country of the Philistines was a full year and 4 months. So after he went back the second time, he's been serving Achish for a year and 4 months. Back to verse 4 of 29:4. And the princes of the Philistines were wroth with him. And the princes of the Philistines said unto him, Make this fellow return, that he may go again to his place, which thou hast appointed him, and let him not go down with us to battle, lest in the battle he be an adversary to us. For wherewith should he reconcile himself unto his master, should it not be with the heads of these men? So they got it right, probably. He's going to go into battle with us, and then at a critical point in the battle, he's going to turn on us, and so we're going to have a mess, you know, within us. And so you're going to wind up getting a bunch of people killed. And maybe David was going to do that. I suppose that's probably the most likely thing. But verse 5, Is not this David, of whom they sang one to another in dances, saying, Saul slew his thousands and David his 10,000s. So even the Philistines knew that song. Verse 6, And Achish called David and said unto him, Surely as the Lord liveth, which is a strange thing for a Philistine king to be saying, right? Acknowledges that, I don't know, you know, if he adopted some of, you know, David's theology or exactly what. But surely as the Lord liveth, thou hast been upright, and thy going out and thy coming in with me in the host is good in my sight. For I have not found evil in thee since the day of thy coming unto me unto this day. Nevertheless, the Lord's favor thee not. Wherefore now return and go in peace, that thou displease not the lords of the Philistines. And David's going to pitch a little bit of a fit here and, you know, protest his innocence. Maybe he was innocent, maybe not. And David said unto Achish, But what have I done, and what hast thou found in thy servant so long as I have been with thee unto this day, that I may not go fight against the enemies of my lord the king? And he's going to pitch a little bit of a fit, but it doesn't get him anything. And Achish answered and said to David, I know that thou art good in my sight as an angel of God. And again, here's Achish talking almost like an Israelite. I don't know if that's David's effect on him, or if Achish, you know, acknowledged, I don't know if this is the Philistines acknowledging that God is really God. In the meantime, we're just going to worship all these false gods. Maybe something like that. But as an angel of God, notwithstanding, the princes of the Philistines have said, He shall not go up with us to the battle. Wherefore now arise up early in the morning with thy master's servants that are come with thee, and as soon as ye be up early in the morning and have light, depart. So David and his men rose up early to depart in the morning to return to the land of the Philistines, and the Philistines went up to Jezreel. And it came to pass, when David and his men were come to Ziklag, that's where they've been hanging out, that's where Achish gave them to abide, on the third day, that the Amalekites had invaded the south and Ziklag and smitten Ziklag and burned it with fire, and had taken the women captive that were therein, and they slew any other, either great or small, they slew not any, either great or small, but carried them away and went on their way. So David and his men came to the city, and behold, it was burned with fire, and their wives and their sons and their daughters were taken captives. Then David and the people that were with him lifted up their voices and wept till they had no more power to weep. I would view this as God getting David's attention, because he's probably not in the will of God doing what he's doing. I'll show you that in a second. And verse 6, And David was greatly distressed, for the people spake of stoning him. They spake of stoning him because back in 27:8, if you'll remember this, 27:8, David and his men, when given this city of Ziklag by Achish, David and his men went up and invaded the Geshurites and the Gezerites and the Amalekites, for those nations were of old the inhabitants of the land, as thou goest to Shur, even unto the land of Egypt. And David smote the land, and left neither man nor woman alive, and took away the sheep, and the oxen, and the asses, and the camels, and the apparel, and returned and came to Achish. So he's going out and attacking those folks that are the enemies of the Lord round about him, and then leaving nobody alive to go back to tell Achish what David's doing. So David is playing a little bit of a double game here, which is not exactly apropos, I suppose, for a type of Christ, right? And so for that reason, his men know that they've been attacking the Amalekites. And so now in their absence, the Amalekites have come and taken their wives and their children. And so they're ready to kill David. Chapter 30, verse 6. David was greatly distressed, for the people spake of stoning him, because the soul of all the people was grieved, every man for his sons and for his daughters. But David encouraged himself in the Lord his God. Now, that's not under the best of circumstances. And when you put yourself in the position David had put himself in, you're due some discouragements, and you're probably due to have the hand of God move against you at some level. But there's a great lesson here in that there's not always somebody around to encourage you. I mean, there's just not. I mean, sometimes in the loneliest parts of the night, there's not somebody there to encourage you. And so one great lesson to take to heart is you need to learn to do your own first aid. There's nobody else to put a tourniquet on, then you got to put the tourniquet on yourself, right? And so David, the Bible says, encouraged himself in the Lord his God. Now this is a guy that's probably, I'll make the case in a second, probably out of the will of God in running things the way he's been running things for about a year and 4 months, okay? It's been a long time since he's inquired at the ephod, and I'm not saying David's wicked, but David is not. I mean, over and over again, the Lord showed him that he wanted him to stay in Judea, even though Saul was chasing him. He kept sending him back to Judah. And David has now, for a year and 4 months, been out. Now, I don't know what a year and 4 months means to you. I don't know how long David thought this was going to go on, but one great lesson about backsliding, getting out of your Bible, and just kind of not doing right is, what happens more often than not is you go for longer than you intended. It's just the way things are. You once the flesh gets some momentum, it has the capability of keeping it going. And once you start yielding to it, it takes a very determined thing to make it stop. The devil, once he gets you on the run, once the lion starts roaring and you start running, it's hard to stop. And so one thing to think about is that usually you go back for longer than you intended to go. And in this case, pushed up against the wall, David recovers himself as he always seems to do. It's one of the marks of David for all the things that he did wrong and for all the things that he did bad. And there were quite a few. I mean, he cost Israel 70,000 men. He did conspire against Uriah. He did go into Bathsheba. And there are some other things. For all the things that David did wrong, he was always reachable. The Lord tried to reach Saul continually once Saul got going down the wrong path. And he never really responded. That was the case with most of the kings of Judah and Israel, really. But David always seemed to be reachable. And so a great attribute to have as a Christian is that weak as you may be and mess up as you have, to always be able to be reached, and where preaching can always get you, and to keep your heart in a condition where even when you're not perfectly right, you still know the Lord's voice and you respond to it. Verse 6. David encouraged himself and the Lord his God. So learn to do your own first aid. It's not always, you're not always able to call somebody on the phone. And, you know, if it's 3 in the morning, you're going to lose friends real fast. You need to learn to do your own first aid. There are some things that, you know, you'll have in your life that you don't even necessarily want to talk to somebody else about. Now, I'm not saying you can't or shouldn't. I'm saying that there's going to be some times that, you know, you're just going to have to figure out whether you have a real relationship with God or not. So David encouraged himself in the Lord. Verse 7. And David said to Abiathar the priest, Ahimelech's son, I pray thee, bring me hither the ephod. And Abiathar brought thither the ephod to David. Now, I wanted to mention this. It has been now since 1 Samuel 23 that David inquired at the ephod. Saul's out chasing David in the wilderness. And the last time that David inquired at the ephod, the Lord spoke to him and told him how to get out of the mess, you know, out of the trap he was in with Saul. Okay? So this is a picture of a guy, a Christian, who is out of his Bible. The ephod is how God spoke to David. So this is a picture of a Christian out of his Bible. So he's out of fellowship with God, and maybe he's gone back to the world a little bit. In so doing, after he inquired last at the ephod, he has since that time almost pulled the trigger and avenged himself on, I'm drawing a blank on his name, Nabal, that churlish man, Abigail's husband. He is on his way to kill him, and it's going to be overkill too because he had all his guys with him just for one sorry sinner. And he's headed to kill him, and Abigail cuts him off. So not inquiring at the ephod has put him in a scenario where he's petulant and malicious, and he's ready to kill somebody at the least excuse. The next thing is that he rather hastily took Abigail to wife, and remember, David knew the scriptures, and the king of Israel is not supposed to multiply wives to himself. And he takes Abigail to a wife very hastily. He departs then, knowing the Lord has continually sent him back to Judah. He then departs to go to Achish. He's been with Achish for a year and 4 months, and he is now, I think he was planning to turn on Achish and his men in the middle of this battle. So he's going to betray Achish. Now all that said is some of that does not set well as far as him being a type of Christ. In this case, he's just a man. Call him a Christian. But he's a man that's been away from the ephod for a long time. He hasn't heard God speak for a while. You don't need to make that mistake. Okay? You have a Bible. You come to church and you get preached at, you hear God speak. It's dangerous to not have God's voice, to not hear God's voice often. It's dangerous. So, down in verse 7, he inquires at the ephod. And David inquired at the Lord, verse 8, saying, shall I pursue after this troop? Shall I overtake them? And he answered him, pursue, for thou shalt surely overtake them, and without fail recover all. Now each time David inquires at the ephod, he doesn't have the trouble that Saul had. God got after a while where he wouldn't answer Saul. But each time David inquires at the ephod, God answers him. And so, you know, I don't know what your experience is with the Bible. You may not get the exact answer that you want, but that's not what you go to the Bible for. What you want to hear is what the Lord wants you to hear. And so don't cease to go back there. But it says, he says to David, pursue, verse 8, for thou shalt surely overtake them. So you're going to succeed and without fail recover all. So You know, I don't know what it is. I don't know why people think that God is so usually adversarial to them. I don't know if it's because he's always trying to spoil their fun or what, but my experience with the Lord is that when I mess up bad, he is usually very merciful to me. So here's David, and yeah, I'm glad you finally showed back up to talk to me. Yeah, go pursue him. It's going to be fine. Nobody's hurt. You're going to get everybody back. That's pretty good news for war. Pretty good news for a bunch of idiots that have come in and taken your wives. Everybody expected their wives to be raped, their kids to be killed, right? So the Lord is really good. I think if you'll go and reflect that the Lord has been really good to you as far as the crops of sin that you could have reaped that you really haven't had to. Back to verse 9. So David went, he and the 600 men that were with him, and came to the brook Besor, where those that were left behind stayed. And he's going to explain that. But David pursued, he and 400 men, for 200 men or 200 abode behind, which were so faint they could not go over the brook Besor. So these guys weren't just laying back. I mean, they were weary enough that they couldn't go on. Verse 11. And they found an Egyptian in the field and brought him to David and gave him bread, and he did eat, and they made him drink water, and they gave him a piece of a cake of figs and two clusters of raisins. And when he had eaten, his spirit came again to him, for he had eaten no bread nor drunk any water 3 days and three nights. David said unto him, "To whom belongest thou, and whence art thou?" And he said, "I am a young man of Egypt, servant to an Amalekite. My master left me because 3 days agone I fell sick. We made an invasion upon the south of the Cherethites," those are in Judah, "and upon the coast which belongeth to Judah, and upon the south of Caleb, and we burned Ziklag with fire." He probably wasn't aware that he was talking to the guy who lived in Ziklag. "But we burned Ziklag with fire. And David said to him, 'Canst thou bring me down to this company?' And he said, 'Swear unto me by God.'" Notice he didn't say by gods or by Baal or by Balaam, but he said, "Swear unto me by God." It looks like the heathen round about are fairly familiar with the God of the Israelites. And they acknowledge him, and maybe they even acknowledge him as being a greater God than their own. I'm not sure. But verse 15, he said, "Swear unto me by God that thou wilt neither kill me nor deliver me into the hands of my master, and I will bring thee down to this company." When he had brought him down, behold, they were spread abroad upon all the earth, eating and drinking and dancing because of all the great spoil that they had taken out of the hand of the Philistines and out of the land of Judah. So here is the world that has stolen the blessings of the Lord's people, and they're partying with it. And I just, you know, it just struck me when I thought about that, that that's kind of what's happening in San Francisco and all these cities. You know, they have taken the blessings of God that the Lord's given to this country, largely because of Christian standards of some measure, right? And they partied down with it. And it's coming to a close pretty quick. Verse 17, "And David smote them from the twilight even unto the evening of the next day." I had a note that I was just going to look at here. Verse 17, "And David smote them from the twilight even unto the evening of the next day, and there escaped not a man of them, save 400 young men which rode upon camels and fled. David recovered all that the Amalekites had carried away, and David rescued his two wives, and there was nothing lacking to them, neither small nor great, neither sons nor daughters, neither spoil, nor anything that they had taken to them. David recovered all." That's a miracle in itself. I mean, a raiding party that hauls away all the women and children, and nobody's hurt, nobody's ravished or anything like that. It's a miracle. Verse, it looks like Lord was getting David's attention. So, are you going to listen to me now? Right? Verse 20. And David took all the flocks and herds which they drave before those other cattle and said, "This is David's spoil." And David came to the 200 men which were so faint they could not follow David, whom they had made also to abide by the brook Besor. They went forth to meet David and to meet the people that were with him. And when David came near to the people, he saluted them. Then answered all the wicked men and men of Belial. So that's the testimony and the judgment of the Holy Spirit. He's saying these guys are wicked men and men of Belial. Of those that went with David and said, "Because they went not with us, we will not give them aught of the spoil that we have recovered, save to every man his wife and his children, that they may lead them away and depart." So there's some hard noses there that aren't willing to give to share the spoil with these folks that could not. It said twice they could not go over; they were too tired. And then said David, "Ye shall not do so, my brethren, with that which the Lord hath given us." So on the day the Lord's blessed you and given you everything back and nothing amiss, now you're going to be a hard nose, right? And David said, "No, we're not going to be a hard nose about this. Who hath preserved us and delivered the company that came against us under our hand? For who will hearken unto you in this matter? But as his part is that goeth down in the battle, so shall his part be that tarrieth by the stuff, they shall part alike." So, you know, think about this in respect to, you know, what we do here. I mean, as I said, you know, not everybody's called to go to the mission field. You may be more called to go on mission trips. But, again, you need to be a part of something in staying back that's supplying the mission field. Staying back is it's no disgrace to not be called to the mission field or called into the ministry. But it's a disgrace not to find something to do. So he says, "No, we're gonna split the spoils with these guys." Verse 25, "And it was so from that day forward that he made it a statute and an ordinance for Israel unto this day. And when David came to a Ziklag, he sent of the spoil unto the elders of Judah, even to his friends, saying, 'Behold, a present for you of the spoil of the enemies of the Lord, to them which were in Bethel, and to them which were in the south of Ramoth, to them which were in Jatir, to them which were in Aror, and to them which were in Shipmoth, to them which were in Eshtemoah, to them which were in Rachel, to them which were in the cities of the Jeremielites, and them which were in the cities of the Kenites, and to them which were in the Hormah, and to them which were in Korashan, to them which were in Aphek, to them which were in Hebron, and all the places where David himself and his men were wont to haunt.'" So these were all hideout places that they had passed through in the years of running from Saul. So it's David's way of paying them back a little bit. All right, chapter 31, verse 1. Any questions so far? Just me talking so far. All right, 31:1. "Now the Philistines fought against Israel, and the men of Israel fled from before the Philistines and fell down slain in Mount Gilboa." Now Mount Gilboa, again, is at the head of the valley of Jezreel. It's over closer to the Jordan River, where the Jordan River plain moves up, and there's that mountain's there. And so, again, I just urge you to think about the fact that here's Saul, who is a type of the Antichrist, okay? And he dies in a place where, you know, the Antichrist is going to die, in the Valley of Armageddon. Verse 2, "And the Philistines followed hard upon Saul and upon his sons, and the Philistines slew Jonathan and Abinadab and Melchishua, Saul's sons. And the battle went sore against Saul, and the archers hit him, and he was sore wounded of the archers. Then said Saul unto his armor-bearer," he said, "Draw thy sword and thrust me through therewith, lest these uncircumcised come and thrust me through and abuse me." But his armor-bearer would not, for he was sore afraid. Therefore Saul took a sword and fell upon it. So Saul according to the Holy Spirit, committed suicide. Right? Verse 5. And when his armor bearer saw that Saul was dead, he fell likewise upon his sword and died with him. So Saul died, and his three sons, and his armor bearer, and all his men that same day together. And again, this was by Gilboa, which is at the head of the valley of Jezreel, which is, you know, winds up feeding into the valley of Armageddon. Verse 7. And when the men of Israel were on the other side of the valley, and they that were on the other side of Jordan saw that the men of Israel fled, that Saul and his sons were dead, they forsook the cities and fled, and the Philistines came and dwelt in them. Came to pass on the morrow, when the Philistines came to strip the slain, they found Saul and his three sons fallen in Mount Gilboa, and they cut off his head and stripped off his armor, and sent into the land of the Philistines round about to publish it in the house of their idols and among the people. So they got to go tell it. They had to go tell their gods what happened. Verse 10, and they put his armor in the house of Ashtoreth. Now, you could be confused about that. Let me show you 1 Chronicles 10 real quick. There's a goddess called Ashtoreth, R-E-T-H. But this is Ashtoreth, and that's different. 1 Chronicles 10. And again, the Bible, if you'll study it close enough, and you'd have to study, in this case, you have to study a genealogy. But the Bible will mostly always define itself. Now, it said back, if you'll keep your finger in 1 Chronicles 10, notice it said, and they put his armor back in 31:10 of 1 Samuel. It said, they put his armor in the house of Ashtoreth. Ashtoreth. Okay, 10:10, 1 Chronicles. In verse 9, they stripped him, took his head, his armor. And verse 10, they put his armor in the house of their gods. That shows you that Ashtoreth, R-O-T-H, is a plural word for gods. So the Ashtoreth are gods. Ashtoreth, which 1 Kings 11, real quick. 1 Kings 11 is a goddess. So they're similar words. They look a lot alike and sound a lot alike. So you just have to be aware and read your Bible carefully, and you find out that it's this way. 1 Kings 11, verse 5. For Solomon went after Ashtoreth, the goddess of the Zidonians. But those are not the same. Ashtoreth and Ashtoreth are different things. Ashtoreth is a goddess. Ashtoreth are plural gods. Baal is one god. Baalim, B-A-A-L-I-M. Those are multiple gods. Okay? Verse 10 of 1 Samuel 31. They put his armor in the house of Ashtoreth. They fastened his body to the wall of Bethshan. And when the inhabitants of Jabesh-Gilead heard of that which the Philistines had done to Saul, all the valiant men arose and went all night and took the body of Saul and the bodies of his sons from the wall of Bethshan, came to Jabesh and burnt them there. They took their bones and buried them under the tree at Jabesh and fasted 7 days. These are Jabesh-Gileadites. I recall going back to take you back to 1 Samuel 11. And these are the guys that Saul saved, because Nahash in verse 1, 1 Samuel 11, 1, Nahash the Ammonite came down there, and he was going to make the Jabesh-Gileads give in, and in giving in, he was going to poke out one of their eyes each. And so the men called for Saul to come save them, and Saul did. And so these Jabesh-Gileadites felt they needed to go do something for Saul. That's why Saul's body didn't hang up for the buzzards to eat. Questions or comments tonight? Do you have something, Naomi? Were Saul's sons saved? Well, we don't always know, but I would say Jonathan certainly was. There's no reason to think not. I don't know whether Saul was saved or not, though. Yeah, okay. Anybody else? Yes, sir.
I'm not all sure that I would agree. I mean, I read this thing a little bit differently.
Okay.